For too long, the fertility market has been bewildering, overwhelming, and frankly, I think has downright ignored the needs and difficult experiences of the people they're supposed to be serving. Ovum has made it their mission to change this completely. Now, I am extremely choosy about who I promote on this podcast because I'm very protective of my listeners and audience, which is why you've probably only ever heard one spoken ad like this before. So it's with complete confidence, excitement, and pride that I can share this amazing company with you. Ovum care about you, truly. From creating products to support conception and fertility that are designed by doctors and backed by the latest science without cutting any corners, from adding access to meditations I've personally written and recorded inside their pregnancy test boxes, Ovum is founded by individuals who've navigated infertility themselves. I really couldn't be more proud to partner with them and tell you about them. Ovum is driven by the belief that everyone who is trying to conceive deserves better, and I am 100% behind this ethos. So head over to startwithovum.com and use code LIFERAFT10 for 10% off their tests and supplements.
Someone that came to one of my latest courses, she messaged me at the end of one of the classes to say, I just feel a little bit less afraid on Thursday nights. And I thought, that's what this is all about. I feel a little bit less afraid and a little bit less alone. And I think, that is it for me. That's what I want.
Hello and welcome to Fertility Life Raft. With me, Alice Rose. This podcast is for you if you find yourself longing for a baby and then finding that the path to bringing them home is not easy. It's for you if you've had enough of feeling like you're losing sight of yourself, because that's how I felt too. And it's also for you if you're supporting someone going through this and want to understand a little bit more. So, welcome to a totally safe space. Honest conversation. Real and raw stories shared, and a little bit of topical stuff too, because I really believe it's not all down to you to get through this. The world needs to catch up too. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Fertility Life Raft. This episode is with somebody who has become a real dear friend of mine, and even though we've never met in real life, which is so often the case these days, isn't it? But one day I really, really hope that that changes, because I have found Helen to be somebody I can just talk to about pretty much anything. And she is one of the most wise and gentle people out there. She is full of knowledge, full of wisdom. And if I had known about her when we were going through our own journey, Helen is the person I'm sure I would have wanted to have on my team as somebody who I had supporting me, and I just think she's wonderful. So let me tell you a bit more about her before we get stuck in. She is primarily a yoga teacher based in Greater Manchester in the UK here, teaching at her new studio, The Fold, hence her Instagram handle, which is at The Fold. And she specialises in yoga for women who are trying to conceive, with an emphasis on creating a restorative space for connection to self and others. And the studio is a hub for trying to conceive support, with lots of other events like women's circles. And she's now started doing holistic treatments, including womb massage. And I know that Helen has recently come to find herself in this space, which she calls being a conception doula. And the word conception meaning well, all kinds of things that we conceive. And it's just such a glorious space that she's creating, a beautiful space, actually. And her Instagram is just full of gorgeous imagery, and I envy her ability to create beautiful looking content, in just a seemingly so simply. But it's a real pleasure to have her here sharing her little drops of wisdom on the show today. So I really hope that you love this episode. Helen, welcome to Fertility Life Raft. It is such an honour and privilege to have you with me. You know how much I love you, and now I'm really excited to bring you to my listeners. So first of all, I'm very jealous of your weather. That's the first thing to say. And you're sitting in your gorgeous yoga studio there, and I can see out
your window, sunny, beautiful garden. That's the first thing to say, because where I am, it's grey and horrible and raining and just miserable. So yes, very jealous of that. Secondly, please just share with everyone, what brings you to this space? What led you to work in this field?
Oh, that's a great question to start with. It's such a privilege to be here, Alice, and I've been looking forward to this conversation so much. So, I was thinking, I don't really like to use the word journey, but it kind of works, doesn't it? So my journey was trying to conceive, started in 2010. I had a long journey, 5 years it took me to bring a baby home. And in that 5 years, I felt very isolated, all the things that people go through on that experience. I have always practiced yoga, and I am a teacher. I've been a teacher for 23 years in primary schools and in universities. And I thought I would have this dream, and I'm sat in the dream right now. And the dream was that I would weave together my yoga, my own experiences of infertility, to offer out a space for women to connect with each other, to use yoga and the tools that we might associate with yoga to find some pockets of calm, and to support a support space. And I'm sitting in it now, which is, I finished it yesterday, actually finished all the paintwork, every single little bit of it is pretty much finished, ready to receive later on this summer and in the autumn. And I really want this space to be a hub for women to come and, I'm imagining it a bit like a harbour where you can come and you can meet other people that are going through it. And I'm hoping that there will be yoga on offer, holistic treatments, a space to be, women's circles. That was my dream, because I was so lonely. Lonely and anxious, I think, are the two words that would sum up those 5 years for me. And I know that not everybody wants to sit and talk about their experiences, but I very, very much did. And in 2010, 11, 12, Instagram wasn't around. It was the community that I think is around now, which I think is amazing. I know you're such a big part of. That didn't really exist. So I did make some connections through Mumsnet, who are still very, very good friends now. And that was so important to me. I needed those people so, so much. I still do, actually. And I wanted people to have that. So there's that twofold thing, really, is breath work, body work, all that kind of work that we can use to come back to ourselves, but also the connection and being seen, being heard, and being understood.
Oh, I love you. I just feel like, you have this almost overarching, like, actually very maternal energy that comes through, and you're such a nurturing kind of soul. And I think every time we speak, and we've actually not met in real life, which I still think is just the weirdest thing.
I forget that, actually.
I know, we have, honestly, we must have spent hours on the phone, and we met through Instagram. And actually, I was trying to think just before we hit record, how did we meet? And I actually can't remember how we first connected.
See, I remember being at Cat and Alice event and thinking, oh gosh, I wish I'd had that. Like, I wish I'd had that opportunity to go to something that was a nice thing, drinks, nice dress, meet some people and feel like, you know, this is not an experience that I am enjoying that much, but that I can meet people that and just feel that sense of normality, that there are loads of other people out there going through this. And whilst it might feel like you're alone, and maybe I was very alone in my particular peer group who had lots of children while I was trying to conceive, but there's so many people out there that are going through it as well. And I just thought, oh, I wish I could have gone to that. That's how I remember meeting you and thinking, what an amazing thing that is.
Oh, yeah. The community element is such a huge part of, you know, what I also found absolutely missing when we were going through everything. As you say, it wasn't there when I was going through everything either. And that maybe that's why we're such, you know, drivers now of making it different for people who are in it now, and making sure that they don't feel that loneliness and that isolation. And it's interesting that you use that word lonely and that word anxious, because I think it's possible to feel that lots of stages of our lives, isn't it? You know, we can be surrounded by people, we can be surrounded by friends even, but we still have that real sense of just feeling alone.
Oh gosh, yes. I remember being at a christening once, surrounded by my friends and all of their children, and I think we just failed a round of IVF, and just thinking, I can't be here. Like, here I am in my community, and I don't feel like at the moment I belong at all. And then you watch your friends meeting their NCT groups and their baby groups. And I remember seeing one friend, and she'd gone to a sling dance, baby in the sling dance group. And I just thought, you're kind of leaving me behind. And they weren't. They were just living their lives and doing their things with the people that they were surrounded by at the time. But it just felt so like we'd gone on these different paths. And I just thought, you know, why shouldn't women have the opportunity to meet other women that are going through fertility challenges? And I'm going to talk about women, but it's men as well, which is really something I feel quite passionate about. So this isn't going to always be a women-only space, I'm hoping, but I need to do some work on what that might look like.
Yeah, that leaving behind piece is massive, isn't it? How did you manage that on your own journey?
I think meeting my group of women on Mumsnet was a pivotal point for me. It's like, okay, I'm not alone. Mumsnet Forum we've come a long way since then, haven't we? Where we're just talking on a forum into an empty space without a face, you know, without image. But I thought, okay, it's not just me. I think I was an oversharer, Alice. So I think when I would meet people, I was like, I'm quite happy to share my story in the thought that I might meet somebody that had gone through it. And I rarely did, which kind of often made me feel worse. And then I think a lot of the things that I do now, I wish that I could put this head on me then, because I think at the time I was trying so many things to get pregnant that probably weren't the things that were necessarily what I needed at that time. I just didn't know. I was in that place of seek and strive and fix, and I became really obsessed with hot yoga. So I was doing hot yoga challenges. I was doing 10K runs. I was doing all this stuff to try and get myself in peak fitness. And I think I actually ended up putting myself in an even lonelier space in a way, trying to tick everything off the list, feel like I'd done everything that I possibly could. And I feel really passionate about that now, in terms of people being compassionate to themselves. I mean, you know, I was at your day in January, and I forget the name of the lady who began, but she was like, I tried everything. It's like, yeah, I tried. I can't think of anything that I didn't try, really far out things. I was commented on someone's post on Instagram yesterday, and she's talking about, I feel guilty because I feel like I'm not, you know, I can't remember the words, but I'm not manifesting hard enough, or I'm not clearing my mental blockages. And it's like all that stuff, all that blame, all that guilt. And I ended up really, really unwell at the end. So I think my managing has come through refining. I think towards the end of my journey, I got to a point where I think I need to refine this, because this isn't working. I have ended up really quite broken with anxiety, and the way that anxiety had physically manifested in my body in terms of lots of symptoms, gut symptoms, heart palpitations, all that kind of stuff. It's like, we need to reframe what you need. And I think I was stepping into that space, I would say in the latter year of trying to conceive and thinking about what we were going to do, because I knew that final round of IVF we had, I didn't want to do anymore. So it was kind of, okay, what does this look like? What does acceptance look like? What does making peace with things look like? And I took my yoga in a more gentle direction. Actually was doing a lot of Kundalini yoga at the time. Gone through a lot of yoga. I go through cycles with my yoga. So I started to bring in a little bit more tenderness. That's where it started to shift for me.
Tenderness, self-compassion, because we've spoken on this before, and I know you're so passionate about it, and I'm actually excited to see, you know, because I know you're moving things in a new direction now with the fold and everything that you're going to bring to this space, and I'm really excited to see it, because it's a desperately needed conversation around guilt and around that push, and that you were saying, that, you know, seeking, striving, fixing thing that we try to do to just, you know, there must be something else I can try, there must be something else I can do, and that guilt and that shame and that blame, Talk to me a bit more about that and why you're so passionate about rearranging that narrative.
I think we have to remember that, you know, infertility is an industry, and it's a really fine balance for me. I think if we look at the average couple, then maybe they take, I think the stats are something like an average couple trying actually might take up to 12 months to conceive, might they? And I think in that 12 months to be able to buy the expensive supplements, change your diet, do all the things that feel like you want to do them, is a reasonable amount of time to be in that space of kind of trying and striving, isn't it? But when we're looking at kind of longer journeys, so for me, it was 5 years. For some people, it's a lot more than 5 years. In fact, I think 5 years is probably a relatively short journey, actually, when we look at the kind of experiences that people go through. Living your life like that day in, day out, thinking about what food you're consuming, thinking about whether you've done enough exercise, too much exercise, whether you are, you know, are you meditating enough? Are you done the hypnotherapy? Have you done all the stuff? And living like that, actually, I think it's really, really tough. And I think stepping out of it can be really hard. So for me, and again, this isn't something that I've widely spoken about. I know we've spoken about it, but I think I am ready to speak about it more. I have a history of very disordered eating. So for me, it was just a black hole of, well, if I try harder and I do all of this diet and I cut this out and I try this and I try this, I think by about 3 or 4 years, I was in quite a poor shape, really, in terms of not knowing what to do. So I was in Sainsbury's and I couldn't buy anything to eat because I was like, oh, I'm not sure that's organic and I'm not sure this. It's like, oh, I can look back at that now and think, that was not helpful for you as a human being. And I think it's about thinking. So like, for example, I remember in the middle of it all, maybe 3 years in, to our experience, we went to London and we met with some friends and it was a sunny day and one drink turned into another drink. We had a wonderful night. It was a really, really great night. And I woke up the next day feeling a bit rough, thinking, oh my goodness, I've just ruined everything. Like, I've got an IVF cycle coming up and I've trashed it, and just being in tears. And it's like, you know, I want to kind of soften things for people to say, if it's Christmas, you know, you can have, there can be balance. And it's, how do we keep hold of that? And it's really hard. I'm not saying that there's a right answer, but I think I want to be the person where people can come to, and I'm not going to say to them, well, have you, you know, I think you should really do this, or I don't want to be that. And similarly with the yoga, I think, you know, fertility yoga can be another thing on the list where I'm going to try it. And I fully understand that. I have huge compassion towards that because I've been there and I know it. But I think I want to never be the person that says, hey guys, I just did this course and 50% of my women are now pregnant. I find that really deeply problematic. I find it actually offensive when I see stuff like that, because what message is that giving? It's giving, I won't go too deep into that because I get kind of feisty, but I think I want it to be something a little bit different. You know, yes, we'll be focusing on poses that I think are appropriate, that have got that feminine energy. We might be doing a little bit of connection to heart, to womb, and spirals, and all of that lovely wisdom. I don't think there's anything on fertility yoga that I haven't read and studied, but I've taken from all of that the bits that I feel work for me, and the pieces that I think would work for a group of women who will all be at very different stages and places. I think when you work one-to-one with a woman, you can really tailor things, and you can work with a cycle. But I with group classes, you know, I think you have to be offering something out where everybody feels safe, and it's not, there's no outcome at the end of it. It's about the, even if it's just for that hour or that night's sleep, or I think someone that came to one of my latest courses, she messaged me at the end of one of the classes to say, you know, I just feel a little bit less afraid on Thursday nights. And I thought, you know, that's what this is all about. I feel a little bit less afraid and a little bit less alone. And I think, you know, that is it for me. That's what I want.
Oh my God. I could just go into so many things that you brought up then. I feel like there's so much to deconstruct over what all of the stuff that you just said. So I'm gonna go back to the first thing that you mentioned, and then I'm gonna go through it because I would love to speak a bit more about all of this. So I think, yeah, gosh, first of all, the eating side of things, the nutrition side of things. And I can really relate because that is something that I went quite far down as well, to the point where I was really very strict with myself over what would pass my lips. Like I was like, I cannot have that because, you know, I was, you know, I saw somebody who was, gave me lots of, you know, good information actually, but I think I took it to the extreme where, because I didn't have that balance at the time, I didn't have anyone like you saying to me, do you know what, it's okay, you know, you can do the good stuff, but you there's also a balance bit where it's all right to have, you know, some time off. And
well, that's softening, you know, I don't know, 80-20, you're on holiday, 20-80, you know, like we are balanced and we are, I think, yeah, I think, you know, we all want to eat well and we all want to be healthy, but I think it's really easy to get very latched on in a particular way of thinking about it that becomes almost, yeah, it brings up those feelings of failure and guilt and shame, and that is the reason why. And I think, you know, fertility is so complex and so mysterious. Yeah. So many people resonate with that of feeling like, oh, I don't know where to turn, and I've had that glass of champagne at Christmas and I'm really worried about it. I think that's really ordinary and really normal, but I think there needs to be a voice that is kind of saying it's going to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and understanding that actually part of that is actually taking a role in your responsibility of how much information you do take in, which I don't know whether that sounds a bit provocative, maybe. I don't mean it to. I mean it to just be like, you know, we do have more control over what we consume than maybe we think we do, because we're bombarded with messaging all the time. So we have to go, all right, there's all this messaging coming in. How can I soften it? How can I make it more compassionate? And as a result of softening and more and being more compassionate, how does that make me feel? Yeah. And therefore, what will my behavior be as a result?
Because it's a relationship, isn't it? If you follow somebody on Instagram or you buy a book about, you know, fertility and lifestyle, they are relationships and they are tacit relationships, but they are still a relationship. And if that relationship isn't making you feel good and the words in that book have made you feel rotten and guilty, like I remember having one particular book that said I must never drink white wine. Like, it was terrible. It's like, oh. And I still remember that. I still remember the page it was on. It was like, okay, that book has to go, you know. You know, send it to the charity shop. And if it was a relationship with a person and that person was making you feel like that in real life as a friend, then you might think, oh, maybe that's relationships had its day. And you can mute and you can unfollow. And it's really tuning into what making you feel nourished. And I really like the intuitive eating, which has got a lot of very gentleness, I think. And it's been very helpful to me.
Yeah, talk to me a bit more about, I'm going to come back to the things you said there in a minute, but just talk to me a little bit more about intuitive eating, because I know you've brought that on the phone call with me before and I was really interested because I don't know much about it, so tell me about it.
I don't know, I'm not an expert in it. I have to put some of my stories of people that I follow that I like, but I think it's about feeling I don't have to demonize a food group. I don't have to give up gluten if I don't have celiac disease. I don't have to only eat organic food to, you know, because that's actually quite a privileged choice to be able to do that. It's okay if I do, you know, it's all about that balance. And it's, I mean, essentially it's about listening to your own appetite, which is not always easy to do, actually. We eat for lots of different reasons, don't we? We don't eat for lots of different reasons. But there is a kind of, there's a softening around that whole message in the intuitive eating movement that gives you that kind of permission that, you know, that there's no bad food. And I love that. It's okay. You don't have to label sins and treats and all that kind of stuff. It's food. And our body is pretty miraculous in terms of what it does with food. And I think I haven't found it very helpful to loosen the grip of some of my kind of rigidity around what I put into my body.
Yeah, because even just all the words you're using there, when you think about being strict and that rigid, and you think, well, how is it going to make me feel if I'm strict and I'm rigid? You're going to feel a bit, you're going to feel trapped, and you're going to feel like not free, and you're going to feel like you have to keep going down this strict rigid path. Whereas when you go into that more intuitive, softer, more gentle approach, you know, we're not saying that you just
eat cake all day every day, although if you want to one day, then go for it. But actually be intuitive about your choices and take some responsibility in them. But
joy, you know, I think we can forget the joy of eating something that is just delicious for its own sake. My acupuncturist told me a story once. She was the most wonderful lady. And she said, you know, it was probably a Chinese, come from a Chinese story about a bowl of brown rice and then this delicious cake. And we can eat the brown rice and that can be, you know, nourishing for ourselves and a good choice. But actually, that, the cake, there is joy in the cake. And in terms of our chi and our energy and our flow, just that eating for pleasure without having to, you know, worry about it afterwards. There's room for both of those things in our lives. And I really like that, the brown rice and the cake.
I love that. I love that. And I speak quite a lot about joy, and it's that because it connects us to ourselves. And that's what you were mentioning as well at the beginning there, that, you know, you want your hub to be that place where you can use all of that wisdom that you have gathered over these years to help people reconnect to themselves, which is also such a passion of mine. And without joy, without finding bits of joy, it's very hard to connect to ourselves, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's so easy to lose sight of where we're finding joy, isn't it? When we're grieving or waiting or worrying. And I think that is, yeah, I think not having it in your diet either. It's like, yeah, I just, so much I could say about it, Alice. But anyone that's listened to this who's found themselves in that place, please know that you're not alone. And every time I put my head up, and I'm quite brave to talk about it on Instagram, I do get a lot of messages. I think it is a huge part of this experience that doesn't really get the spotlight that it probably needs.
No, and I'm really grateful for you for talking about it, because I think I completely agree. And I think it's, we need people like you to talk about it in your, from all of your experience that you've got, you know, personal experience, mentoring experience, yoga experience, but you're such a knowledgeable person about this stuff. So it's really important that we do hear from people like you who can speak on it really knowledgeably. That's not a word.
It's a practice, isn't it? It's about, oh, I've noticed that, I've gone into that space. Maybe you're getting ready for an IBS cycle and you're really trying to get everything right, but maybe it's about thinking, okay, it's okay. I've noticed I've gone into a space of not thinking about this in a very particular black and white way, and maybe I need to kind of recalibrate a little bit. I think we do get in that space where it's really hard to see beyond it, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing that I loved what you said, was that, you know, you wish you could put your head that you have now on you back when you were going through the fertility stuff. And
I'm in that privileged position, aren't I, to know how my story ended, to be able to say that. But I think I did notice a change in me around the 4-year mark, where I kind of thought, you've got to make some changes to you, whatever that looks like. We had started to look into adoption at that point, and I'd started to feel really excited about that as an avenue for us to go down. And I just noticed the change in me. But I think the second year of us trying was probably my most awful year of the way that I treated my body and the way that I treated myself. But yeah, I think my heart goes out to anybody that's still in that place, because it's cyclical, isn't it? And we can find ourselves on steady ground 1 month, and then the next month, not so much. So I think it's like rowing your boat, and you've got to kind of keep in that steady slipstream. And it's just, if you get out of it, you have to kind of think, okay, how can I get back? Paddleboarding, I've fallen off a board. How can I get back on it again?
For the life raft.
Yes, totally the life raft, totally. It doesn't have to be, you can suddenly make it all right and forevermore. I think it's always changing and evolving, and everything you take on, you can use little tools to kind of come back to. And I know that you do so much of that work in your life.
Yeah, well, it's also, you know, that this is also linked. And what I love about what you did is that bringing in all of that knowledge and wisdom about you know, your breath work and your yoga and your mood, you know, that's the kind of gap that I feel like I have in my knowledge, is that, yeah, that embodiment of what is actually happening in our minds, and then how it connects, and then what happens to our bodies. And, like, you know, that I love that you're making that connection in those. Well,
just think of what we go through in terms of Even like from the beginning, you're being tested, blood tests, the HSG tests, the treatment cycles, the IVF treatment cycles, all of that, even getting, you know, your natural period. It's so much for our bodies. It's just so much for our bodies to hold. Mm-hmm. Little trauma reactions, even on, you know, even after 6 months of trying, I remember being at the airport, getting my period, thinking, I've just been devastated. And I think that is so much for our bodies to experience, that how can we find those kind of micro bits of soothe, self-soothing, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, yeah, you're right, because it doesn't actually have to be one of those big things like, you know, an IVF fail or, you know, other really big stuff that happens to your body as you go through this. It can be those little micro moments, and even a pregnancy announcement can be, you know, it's such a physical reaction that you can have, and that your body has to like process that, because it catapults you into that fight or flight, doesn't it?
Fight, flight, freeze. So many, you can see it kind of passing through me like a movie of the things I experience, like, you know, being in the doctors and getting test results and just thinking, I don't know how to walk back to my car. Like, I actually don't know how I'm going to physically walk myself back to the car. But there's so many. I think in any kind of extended fertility journey, any one person will have so many of those moments. And our bodies don't always know how to process that. And I think we can really, yeah, I think the physical impact of long-term anxiety and stress on our physical being is really tough. And how can we, take some space just to think, right, okay, I could really do with a better night's sleep tonight. I could really do with my heart not racing so much this evening. It doesn't have to be, right, I'm going to heal myself and it's all going to be fine from here on in. I think it's that, those little cycles, little rituals that you can put in place that you know you've got. And I actually called upon it myself recently. And it's a really pathetic story, but I got stung by a bee, and it really worried me. It's like, oh gosh, I've got a history of anaphylaxis, and I was like, it was swelling up my throat, and I was like, I could feel myself, and I was like, okay, what do you practice, what you teach? So it's like, came back to the breath, had a little look around the room of things that I could see, and it's like, right, okay, that's all I needed. Just needed to just do that, those two things, and I'm back in the room. So I think just having them really kind of embedded, that you know you've got those things that you can come to. If you've got injections to do and that is just terrifying, then what can we have in a little mini toolbox that might be able to help a bit?
Yeah, oh my God, definitely. I'm sure everyone listening is like, what can I do? So what is your go-to? Like when you say, you know, when you had that bee sting the other day, when you did your injections, what is your go-to thing?
Breath, I think, for me. And I think that can sound really quite cliched. It's like, oh, not the breath again. But actually, it's really powerful. So you have to find the breath that works for you. And I think, three breaths in, three breaths out. Just taking 30 seconds just to do that in your day when everything's getting too much can just be a bit of an energetic reset, I think. I like to breathe in for 5 and out for 7 for about a couple of minutes. That can be really, really grounding. If you're sat in that waiting room thinking, oh gosh, I just can't, then just coming back to that. Quite, for me, looking around and counting some things that I can see, I think, like actually physically being in the space, and maybe some things that I can hear. You can go through all of the senses, but for me, it's like, right, okay, where am I? Where am I in the room? They're tools really that I think people that have been through a lot of quite dramatic experiences, just about that kind of, okay, not going into that disassociation or freeze or that place of real kind of fear space, just bring yourself back to the here and now, I'm safe. Quite like hand on the heart, little tiny moments, little, I heard on a podcast with Richard Rudd lately, I don't know whether you ever listened to him, he does the Gene Keys work, he's like little islands of calm, and I thought that's so nice, just find that little islands of calm that can be really, really small, but you know, hand on the heart, maybe hand on the belly, just those little things, doesn't have to be huge, you don't have to get on the mat and do an hour's restorative practice, because sometimes you can't access that. If you're really, really anxious, it's probably not, it might not, you might not be able to do that, you know, you might not be able to go and do a meditation if you're in that state of, if you're in that flight state or that kind of, your body's getting into that fight place, and you're probably not going to be able to sit and do that guided meditation or that, you know, Shavasana or Yoga Nidra without your mind going all over the place.
So if you go out for a walk instead and don't beat yourself up that you didn't do the yoga or you just had to do something else, you know, you have to watch, I don't know, something on the telly.
Yeah. Oh my God, definitely. I think for me, what I found really helpful when I started learning about this stuff was to understand why I was doing it. And that, you know, actually there was a really good, I did a course with Lauren Barber, who we both know, and she's wonderful. And she taught me quite a lot about what happens when we go into that fight, flight or freeze mode. And then therefore what we need to do to come out of it. And that, you know, that it's as a stressor. So the stressor will come in and then you need to complete the stress cycle so that you can actually get rid of it. And everything you're talking about there, all those islands of calm, all the little tools and the breath and everything, that is a way to complete that stress cycle. And just
and the uniqueness of it, so everyone will have a different set. So yes, if you are ready, and I think of all the things that happen when we're trying to conceive and going through all of the things, maybe hospitals, maybe family relationships, all those things, why would we not be in fight or flight? We're ready for something to happen to us, aren't we? So it's about, if we want to come back into that parasympathetic nervous system where our bodies can rest and digest, what's the bridge for you that helps you to be able to do that? And it may be yoga, and it may be, you know, great, come along to a restorative yoga class, brilliant. It may be that you need to go on a run for some people and get some of that adrenaline out to be able to access some of the kind of soothing things. It may be that you need to, I don't know, light a candle or have a bath, something really that's going to take you back. And we need to find out what works for us. And I think it will be different for everybody. But I think for me, breath is really important.
Yeah, definitely. And this is actually something that I talk about, you know, when I do the very first module of Reclaim, which is building your life raft, and explain what I mean when I talk about building your life raft, is that exactly that it's got to be bespoke. So your life raft is bespoke, it's unique to you, because not everyone will, you know, respond to the yoga or the run or whatever. And for me, one of my big things is like, I'm just drawn to water all the time. So quite often I'm, you know, luckily I work from home. So sometimes in the middle of the day, I'll just go and have a hot shower because I just feel like that need to, like, and I find it really cleansing, and I find it really helpful to just reset my energy. And, like, you know, that for me is like a real go-to, like have a shower, have a bath, which obviously is not accessible always to lots of people and sometimes not to me. So just to understand, okay, well, I can't have a shower or a bath right now. What can I do that might help me to, you know, come into that a little bit?
You know, if it's clean sheets on the bed and you go and you just lie down, you know, and you get in those lovely clean sheets and you put some nice music on and you take that time. It's about kind of trying out those different things, and when, you know, not saying that that's going to take it all away. But I think that's another important thing as well, isn't it, to say that I think something that I needed to do and that I had to do quite in the past few years, actually. It's always very tender and delicate to say, but I really wanted to have another child, which I would kick myself in the face if 5 years ago for saying that, because I'm like, you know, if you were lucky enough to have one child, then that you could never think that you should deserve any other children, but we have, and we haven't been able to do that. I think for me, honouring my grief and honouring the whole of what I've experienced since I was 32, 31, whenever we started trying, I've wanted to run away from that. And I haven't really wanted to sit with those difficult feelings of pain, because we don't, do we? If someone said, well, you need to go and sit with your pain, I'm like, no, thanks. I'd rather do anything else than do that. But actually, I think being with what we are feeling, for me, has been quite critical in terms of being able to move into a space of acknowledgement and a space of recognition of everything that we have endured as a couple, and loss, and all of the losses, all of the mini losses and big losses. And yeah, I've had to do that work, and it's been painful, but it's been worth it.
Absolutely, honouring that pain and acknowledging, because we can't actually move into the next bit, I don't think, unless we sit in the difficult moment. If we come down and just go, okay, and really look at, you know, and actually I think I think that's really relevant to talk about when it comes to fear that's come up a lot here, because you know your space that you're very passionate about creating a really safe harbour and a really safe and gentle space, because so much of the time we are living in, we literally are scared. Like a lot of the time when we're going through fertility stuff, we feel so much fear about what will happen, what won't happen. So as well, yeah, to just
so much unknown, so much that we want to know. Like, I want to know the reasons why, I want to know the answers, I want to know what's going to happen, I want to know what the ending is going to be. And it's scary, you know. I think you wrote a post about it being terrifying, and that just resonated with me so much, because it is terrifying. And I think if I could just, yeah, someone can walk through these doors and just for that hour and a half that they're here, feel like, okay, mm-hmm. they can just moor up here for a little bit, and then mm-hmm. I'm not alone. I think mm-hmm. hopefully that will be some soothes that I can send back out into the world through a difficult experience. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think people sometimes say, well, you know, sit with your feelings, and I don't always know what they are. I think we don't always know what our feelings are, do we? And I think that gets said so much. It's like, you know, notice how you feel. It's like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I feel numb. And maybe numbness is actually perfectly valid. I think it's about adding validity to all of the things that we feel and experience. And we don't always have to have language to attach to something. We don't always have to know even, but we have to give ourselves space, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, that space. And you know, you're right, sometimes we don't know. I feel like I get people tell me a lot, I don't really know how to label this, or I don't understand. And it's helpful to become more aware and more emotionally intelligent, because when we are able to understand a little bit more, then we are able to probably give ourselves what we need more. But at the same time, sometimes we are really just not going to know, and that's also totally fine. I've had really odd like 24 hours where I've had all kinds of weird feelings bubbling up, and I honestly, you know, Simon's go to, what's the matter? And I'm like, I don't know, like I'm just feeling very emotional, and I just feel like I need to feel that. And actually that brings me onto something which I feel really strongly about as well, is that idea of having to, and I'm doing quotation marks, people listening, try to stay positive. Like that really gets my goat, because I'm like, no, you don't need to try and stay anything, you just have to be.
You don't have to walk through the rocky hills of infertility with a smile on your face, because it's really, really tough, you know? And I think that yeah, there's that kind of, I think people quite often who maybe haven't experienced it will go to that as advice, because they want to make the other person not be in that place, because it's really uncomfortable to watch somebody else in grief or pain. But I think the whole, yeah, you're not conceiving because you're not thinking about it in a positive way is just not, I think we're hopefully moving on from that. That's what I'm hoping. And I know you've done so much work on that. You don't have to feel positive or ever. You don't have to think that that's the reason why you are where you are. Because you have to, someone has to walk in someone else's shoes, don't they? I think for 100 miles before they say, well, come on, chin up now. But that's because people find it difficult to know how to help, don't they?
Yeah, and oh gosh, absolutely, you know, and that as you know I could absolutely go down a path of, you know, the things people say, but we'll stay with the feeling thing, because I think that it's really helpful to know that it isn't, you know, and I know that you, this again is something that we both feel strongly about, is like trying to get this message out that it's not your fault, you know, if you haven't been able to stay positive. But for me, and again, something which I talk about in Reclaim, I like to think of positivity as, I think it's positive to cry. I think it's positive to be angry. I think it's much more positive to feel how we feel than to pretend to feel any other way than what we're feeling, as difficult as that might be.
And it has to be an unlearning and a relearning sometimes, doesn't it? Because I don't think in my own childhood it was, you know, were we always allowed to be all of those things all of the time, you know, and express ourselves in the way that we probably wanted to? We have to kind of relearn how to find that sometimes.
I don't think for a long time I really knew what angry felt like. I think I do now. Yeah, I think I do now. But I'd say for a lot of my adult life, I've not felt very in touch with that emotion. I think it's really complex. Someone gave me a little emotions wheel in a group chat that I'm in, and we were talking about how we don't always know what we're feeling. And it was this huge emotion wheel. It's like, actually, that's quite useful because I can kind of look at it in a different way when there's like 100 words there. We don't have words in our English language for all of the feelings that we feel either. So I think that's, you know, we can't always think our way out of some of these things. We just have to kind of feel it. And that's where embodied work can be quite so useful. Cause like, let's just notice sensation. Let's notice lack of sensation. Let's just notice what's living in our physical tissue at the moment as we're together. Mm. And I really love that. I love that work. Mm. It's gentle exploration, isn't it? And we can then maybe we can let some things go, we can move some things on.
Exactly that. And I think, yeah, the emotions wheel, that came up when I first heard about the emotions wheel when I did a podcast with Chloe Brotheridge, actually, like a good, gosh, year and a half or so ago now, 2 years ago maybe I spoke with Chloe, and I was like, oh, that's helpful. And now I bring that into the things that we go through in some of the work that we do, because I feel like that does come up so much of the time. And actually when we're able to go, okay, so I'm feeling maybe like this, is a really helpful thing to be able to do. But also, you know, coming back into the embodiment thing, that yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it, how our bodies might give us signs as to if something isn't feeling right. And I've definitely been feeling that in the last 24 hours. Something has not been feeling right. I don't know what it is, but really trying to just listen. And
like quite often in a yoga class, someone might say, relax the jaw. And you're like, oh, I didn't even realise that. They were actually walking around all day clenched, because we don't kind of notice those kind of small sensations that we're holding or we're gripping, or and I think it's just useful to have that time to kind of unravel a little bit and peel some of those things away so that we can kind of come into that more restful place. I actually went to a yoga class myself on Sunday. I haven't been to one for ages. It was absolutely beautiful. It's with Katrina from Yogi Girls. I'm going to put her in there because she's so wonderful. And I was really, I couldn't get into it to start with, and all of a sudden I let myself, and I think I had that permission to just let myself, and it was just wonderful. And by the end, you know, you have that feeling where you think, oh, I can't be bothered. I don't know whether I want to come to the class, because I know it'd be wonderful because she does lots of other kind of teachings about summer solstice, and I really want to do that, but my body isn't feeling yoga tonight. And then by the end, I just had the most magical sleep. And I think sometimes it's just surrendering. It is a surrendering, and it's suddenly found you, and it's like, oh, there it is, that sweet spot of what's what I needed. And I think that's, if I can just kind of get that in some people that come to my class, and that's, I feel really kind of like I've achieved something. I think that little doorway into something a bit calmer, less choppy waters.
It's that tiny, tiny thing, and we don't realize how powerful those little tiny things are, because actually they build up. And every time we do that small thing, and every time we do find the way to surrender, and I love surrendering, that's like a big word, surrender. But people often aren't sure about it, because when you talk about surrender, it can bring up feelings of like, well, surrender means giving up, and then that has all these connotations, and actually it's not to do with that at all. It's
actually control, or all that kind of, what happens if I put all of that down, I don't actually know who I'm going to be or what's going to be there on the other side. Yeah,
but it's such a relief to just,
I think it's quite common for people to cry, and it's quite common for people to say, I'm really sorry that I'm crying. I think we are used to apologizing, and actually that can be so cleansing, but our impulse is to like want to hide it away, isn't it, and not show people that that's what's happened, and feel like we have to hold those tears back in and wipe them away. It's like, actually, maybe that is exactly what you needed. And I think it's really interesting that yoga can quite often, people can be lying in shavasana and just start crying, and I think it's just that sense of release, and we don't have to understand it even, but I think it's just allowing, which is hard.
Yeah, allowing, surrendering, all of that. It's such a relief and it's so important. I could literally talk to you, Helen, all day, and I'm really noticing that we're coming up to our allotted, you know, time that we've carved out for this chat. Just one more question for you before I let you go. So we've spoken about, you know, lots of the things that you reach for. What would you say is in your life raft right now?
Ooh, that's a good question. It has to be my yoga mat. I'm imagining my life raft at sea now. It's going to have to be quite a big raft. Has to be my yoga mat. Whether that is getting on it or just having it there, knowing it's there for the physical practice, beyond physical practice, breath work, meditation, and then all the other little things, all the esoteric things that you know that I love, essential oils and cacao and meditation and journaling, all of that kind of happens on my mat. I do it on my mat. So the mat has to go with me because that's, I need a little bit of solitude if I can. I know that that's not always easy to come by. So solitude with my own little practices and a pen so I can write and paint. So I express a lot of my feelings through painting and writing, which maybe I can share with people actually in the coming year. And then people, I don't want to be alone on my little raft. So I've got my mark, he's like my rock. And yeah, those friends, you know, those friends that really see you. And then I think I'd have a hamper, and like a hamper of joy. And in that hamper, there'd be like, you know, really posh glass of cold white wine. There'd be a nice cake, some Luxe spa products, like, you know, spoil yourself, eat the cake. Eat the burger. I'd have like my joy hamper, my little life raft, paddling it. Oh, and nature. I'd have to have a little secret door that would take me out into the woods or the ocean or, yeah, somewhere where I can. Oh, my telescope. See, it's getting a bit heavy now. I've probably sunk the raft. I have a big telescope because I'm in my garden. And, you know, if I'm really struggling and I don't feel like getting on my mat, I walk in the trees or get my scope out and look at the moon or the stars. It's very humbling and nourishing just to get that sense of connection with the bigger sphere, the celestial sphere that we're in. You know, I love all of that stuff, connecting to all those rhythms and seasons and cycles and moon, and it kind of, it's really calms me. So yeah, secret door. I don't know what I said that on your podcast before. Got a little secret door.
I really want to come with you on that life raft, and I think we'd have a lovely time. I'm just going to park mine and come and get yours, and we'll go for a little sail, and we'll just have such a delightful time looking at everything.
Nature photography, so I grew up with all of that stuff. I grew up, it's just like a language to me, and I feel so lucky that I have it. I know that all the stars in the sky, and I'm so glad that he taught me all of the stuff, all the words for moths and plants and creatures, and as part of my literacy, and I go there and feeling like I can't access anything else. It's like, let's go and look for dragonflies and forget everything else. I think, yeah.
You are such a well of wisdom, and I feel like I just want to like soak you up and like imprint you on me. You have so much to share, and I really want to thank you for your time today, and like, you know, for everything that you do and that I know is coming. I just know it's going to be the most beautiful, safe, gorgeous, lovely offerings that you're
Yeah, Alex, please come one day. That would be so lovely.
I would love that. I would really love that. Thank you so much, Helen. Helen, where can everyone find you?
So this is The Fold. That's my studio on Instagram. I'm at The Fold. I've got a few events this summer, only a few, and more things running in the autumn. And I'm also training in womb massage. So that's going to be my holistic thing that I'll be offering here. I really want to go on that journey and take other people on that journey as well. So, and I'm always there. People just want to, you know, I'm mostly in my DMs, and I love those relationships that I have, but I'm sure you have that as well, Alice. So I'm always there. The door is always open. If people want to come to me or ask me anything, then please do.
Thank you so much, Helen. And yeah, everyone go and find Helen on Instagram. She is amazing. And yeah, just the most delightful person. Thank you so much.
Don't you just want to hang out with Helen all the time? I do. I find myself sending her long voice messages on both WhatsApp and Instagram. And she does the same. And I think we just have an awful lot that we feel aligned with and that we love to talk about. And I just, anyway, so that's why I wanted to get her on this podcast, because I knew that you, everyone who listens to this, would love it. So please let us know what you think as ever. Pop over to Apple and leave us a review there. It really does make a huge, huge difference to who actually finds this podcast. Or just also let me know, get in touch, alice@thisisalicerose.com. Come and find me at This Is Alice Rose. And Helen can be found on Instagram @_the_fold, which I highly recommend. So I hope that you are feeling well today. I hope you're going gently. I hope that this podcast has helped to fill up your own life raft, or given you some inspiration on how you might think about filling it up yourself today. And if it has, then let us know. As ever, we are here for you and we love hearing from you. So take care and see you soon.